Welcome to the Success is Subjective podcast series brought to you by collegealternative.org, presented by Lilly Consulting. I'm your host, Joanna Lilly. In today's episode, I had the pleasure of interviewing Michael Collins. Michael is a certified CBT life coach, and as the founder and principal therapeutic educational consultant, Michael helps families and individuals achieve the goals that they set for themselves by serving as their chief advocate through some of life's most difficult times. He is a dear friend of mine and one of the kindest human beings I've seriously ever met. So if you do not know him, you absolutely need to connect with him. But for the time being, let's not wait any longer. Here's Michael. All right. Michael, I'm excited to have you on the podcast. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Joanna. It's always a pleasure to be with you, and it's just so nice. It's awesome.
Well, I'm super jazzed to ask you these questions to have you share parts of your history leading up to where you are now, which is, you know, shameless plug, an exciting place for me as an outsider, but I know for you as well, but we will get there. So to start off, why don't you actually tell the listeners, where did you grow up and what was the information or kind of the messaging that you were receiving from your immediate family, as well as kind of the larger community in which you were raised about post-secondary education?
Oh, great question. So I grew up in a small Nebraska town of about 25,000 people in western Nebraska. So, you know, I always say Nebraska is not the end of the world, but you can see it from there, at least from my hometown. And I'm the youngest of four. So I have three older sisters. And, you know, as being the youngest, I pretty much followed their path. And back in the day, you know, it was the traditional, hey, you get done with high school and you go to college. And that's what my family did. And that's, you know, being the youngest, that's what I followed along with. And my wife and I talk about this all the time, but we never, you know, being in Nebraska, Nebraska has a strong, the university has a strong contingency of people. And we grew up with Nebraska football. That's all we knew. And we didn't even think about going to another university. And we should have. Like, we didn't expand our horizons. You know, from my hometown, the university was 3 hours away, so I could come home on the weekend. I could do anything easy that way. And my sisters went to the University of Nebraska, and that's the only place I looked. So it was, I wish it was something that, looking back on, that I would have taken a lot more, you know, paid a lot more attention to the other opportunities that were out there to really expand my horizon. And then I think about that and I think, well, then I wouldn't have met my wife and, you know, a lot of things wouldn't have happened that are so amazing and great now. So I'm just pleased that, you know, that I went to school and it's kind of led me down this path.
Well, so talk about that, right? You went to the University of Nebraska, which is a huge school. And, you know, fun fact, you already kind of alerted us to the fact that you met your wife there, which is super exciting. But talk to us just in general, how was being in, like, what was your college experience like?
Yeah, I was very athletic, so I played a ton of sports. I did have opportunities to maybe play some lower level basketball and stuff like that. And then I decided, nope, I'm not going to focus on that because it's probably not going to go anywhere. And so I'm just going to go to the University of Nebraska. But I had a ton of people calling me as a senior in high school for fraternities. And, you know, I really didn't know what to expect. I'm the only boy in my family, and I didn't, you know, nobody had been through a fraternity before me. And so I really went that route. I found a great connection with a group of people I didn't know at the time that are now some of, you know, have been lifelong friends and people that I still talk to every, you know, every month, it seems like. And so I joined a fraternity, and that gave me, you know, a pledge class of 30 really close friends. Not at the time, you know, you had to grow to know each other and to learn about each other, but it brought me into a group of a whole bunch of people that had different trends and different ways of doing things and different ways of thinking and different goals than I did. And so it was a way to really challenge me. And I did have some friends that didn't join a fraternity, and it was really hard for them. You know, they spent most of the time, and I'm not saying, you know, the Greek life is the way to go, because I know it's totally changed now from back in the day when I went, but it did give me a sense of community where other people didn't have that, and it was harder for my friends to find that. And the way they found that was they went to their friends that were in a fraternity and they met their friends. And so they found a community. And so I, you know, that's what I would really stress is, you know, however you do it and however you go to college or post-secondary education or whatever that path is, you know, it's good to have interests. It's good to find a way to find a community, and you do that through your interests. So that's what I followed. And I had no idea what I wanted when I went there. I had no idea who I wanted to be. I had no idea what I wanted to study. You know, so I really focused on my degree. I switched it as a junior. So I went through a lot of different facets of it, but I basically got a liberal arts degree at the University of Nebraska. And I just can't stress enough of what that meant to me or what it has meant to me, because it really is a degree just about critical thinking. And how do you think critically, and how do you be able to go from A to B, and you know, how do you do that on a daily basis? And so it's really helped me in my life for sure.
Okay, so liberal arts degree, gosh, I feel like sometimes folks either you're in one camp where you love it and you think it's the best like career, like degree path, like the you get a little bit of everything, right? And it's skill building, and it's not particular, like, you know, I'm going into business and I need a business degree and I'm taking these business classes. It's just like so much more kind of like creating well-rounded individuals, which I think critical thinking, to your point, is so needed nowadays. But in the other camp, you know, right, people are, you know, completely look at any type of liberal arts degree and they stick up their nose because they're like, what kind of degree is that? You know, I'm just being, you know, a little dichotomous right now with how that typically plays out. But I'm curious, because with that degree, what did you do after you graduated? Because I'm curious actually to hear a little bit more of your kind of employment or professional journey, having that degree as the foundation to get you through all of the chapters professionally to where you are now. So what were some of the jobs that you had? What did you do?
Yeah, I mean, I love thinking back on that. And first, I kind of answer the liberal arts question, because I agree with that. You know, college degrees, I'm not sure the ROI is where it was when I was there. You know, to be honest, and if you look at a profession, then you probably are going to get your money out of what you're doing. If you are, you know, looking at to be a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant or nursing or something where you have to go through and you have some pretty important early things that you have to learn, and then it segues you into that profession, there's probably good ROI for that. With a liberal arts degree, I think it can be challenged right now on that ROI. You know, parents are paying for 4 years of school with kids who don't know really what they want to do yet, and they're not focused on a path yet. And it's happening maybe a little later in life than it did when I went to school. And because of that, you know, maybe spending that money backpack in Europe will give you a better degree. You know, maybe spending that money doing really good gap years that help you find out who you are would be a lot better. For me, I looked at there's a great book out there, and I look at it like it's called lattice work. So you look at, you know, a lattice that is on this, maybe the side of a garden, and you have a vine that kind of grows up through it and it weaves through it and around it. You know, that's really, if you can picture a liberal arts degree or a way for you to get educated in areas that interest you. There's a great book, but it's called Lattice Work, and it's showing my age because it was written a long time ago, but I think it's still really relevant, where you can go in many different directions. And so, like, for me, it's really hard for anybody to pin me down on, you know, on my path, because I always say it this way. I grew up Lutheran. I grew up let's see, was a member of Westminster Presbyterian Church for 16 years. And I was one of four people that ran a private Methodist liberal arts university. And so even that sounds wonky, you know, when you look at it that way. And so my path was, I left the university. I met my wife over a bowl of Cheetos in a sorority, eating lunch one day. And from that point on, you know, I thought, okay, we're getting married. I got to get a job, you know, and I found a job and I worked for one of the world's largest contract research organizations that did phase 1-3 clinical trials. So kind of cool story, but I actually brought in one of the clients that did the first HIV vaccine out of California. And so my clients were across the whole United States at that time. And my territory was from Lincoln to the East Coast. And so I worked with C-suite pharmaceutical executives, and they did their clinical testing and trials before they could be on the market. And so it was a really high stress position, but it was right out of school. And, you know, what helped me there was, again, it's all about people and who you know and connections. But what helped me there is the person that owned the company, Bob Harris, who is just an incredible mentor, and that whole Harris team. Bob's grandfather, or Bob's dad, is considered the grandfather of contract research organizations, and he started the company. But Bob wanted to start a team of younger people that came in and did some things, and he hired me, and he trusted me, and he trained me. And he, when I say training, like we would go to video conferences in the mid-90s before anybody had video. And we would talk to people in Belfast, Northern Ireland, and, you know, all that. And here I am, a kid from, you know, small town Nebraska, working with people all across the United States. You know, we did all the testing for NutraSweet. So my client was the CEO of Monsanto, who would call me and say, hey, my jet's over the facility. I'm landing. Come pick me up. We got to do some work, you know, that kind of stuff. And it was just an amazing thing. But really what it was that group of people that owned and ran that company and the people they had there that took me under their wings, and they trained me and they taught me how to sell and how to be responsive to people and customer service and all of that. So that was my first position out of college, and it was amazing. And then one day I got a call from the president of the Nebraska Wesleyan University, and she said, hey, do you know who I am? I'm like, no, I have no idea. Well, your name came up and we'd like to hire you and interview you. And I'm like, okay, so Bob Harris is the chair of the Board of Governors. Have you talked to him? And because he's my boss and he's somebody that, you know, I look up to. And she's like, no. And honestly, once again, it's a great story, because Bob called me to his office about 2 days later and he said, hey, Mike, I heard you got a call from the president of Nebraska Wesleyan. And I'm like, yeah. And he said, I think you should look at it. And I'm like, huh. You know, he had enough faith in me, but he also had enough confidence in me to let me go and let me learn something new. And so he really advocated for me for that position. And I ended up getting that position. And he told me, he's like, hey, Mike, you know, you leaving is going to cost us a lot of money. Because at the time I was, you know, one of the top salespeople in the organization. But at the same time, boy, do I admire that. Like, Bob is still somebody I will call today and say, hey, I need advice, or I need support, or I need help. And he's always been there for me. And actually, that whole leadership team, you know, we talk about it all the time, that I haven't really been around a leadership team quite like that one yet. And I've tried to replicate it everywhere I've gone, and it's been really hard to replicate. So that's something that, you know, I think about all the time. But so I went from Nebraska Wesleyan, and I had an opportunity with some really good friends of mine to leave there. And part of that was, it was such a busy job. I was the only person reporting to the president. So I ran one of the operating divisions, and the only person reporting to the president that didn't have a PhD. And I was 16 years younger than the next person sitting next to me. And so it was busy. We rebranded the entire school. We raised a lot of money. We did a lot of fun, great things. But at the same time, my sons, you know, thought I lived in the garage because I was never home. And so, you know, you're at every Thanksgiving, every fundraising event, every Christmas event, every football game, every, you know, you're just everywhere all the time. And I love that, but I needed to change it up. And so I had some friends that are dear friends of ours that had a small manufacturing firm. And so I left Wesleyan and I went to run a small manufacturing firm in a very small town. And it was amazing for me. We did a lot of great things, and it was it was really hard too, but just an amazing experience for me. And those friends gave me that opportunity, and it was just amazing for me, as even though it was kind of tough, and we did some great things. And from there I left and really became more of a consulting role. And the consulting role, you know, I had different places that I would either choose to be a consultant or they would hire me. And it would be for a certain period of time, and you'd come in and do what you needed to do. And then it led me through my family history and my family path with our kiddos, led me to, you know, becoming a therapeutic consultant. So I kind of summarized all that, but we could talk for days about my weird path.
Well, and I think that some, not all, of the audience for this podcast actually is familiar with what a therapeutic consultant does, or who it is that we serve, or kind of the work that it is that we do. So if you can just, I mean, shameless plug, right? Like, what's the name of your consulting practice? Who are you serving? What do you do? And then I'm going to ask you a really, really loaded question.
Cool. I hope it's an easy one. Okay. So yeah, a therapeutic educational consultant. You know, I've always been client focused, always. It's been a big part of every role I've ever had in a career, and it just is innate with who I am. And working with my own children and having some challenges there really led me into the industry, so to speak, of all these great therapeutic programs. And what I've realized is that a lot of my clients and families go to therapists every day of the week. And not one time does any of those therapists say, you know, there's this great big world of therapeutic programs that can help your son or daughter feel better faster. And so parents don't know what they don't know. And then the circle, they try to expand their circle from their local community and out. And when they can't find what they need, they find somebody like me and all the other great consultants that are out there. And so, you know, I started this practice because my wife and I said we didn't want anybody to go through what we went through on not having that knowledge. And if we could help one family, we would be successful. And so that's where we started. And, you know, now we're helping a lot of families. But I did have a goal and more of a, more of a core value of the business that I started thinking of before I even started, and it still holds true today. And my mission statement or that core value is I want the kids and the young adults that I represent, I want them to know themselves better than anybody knows themselves. And many of the kids I work with, they just don't know themselves. The school systems have knocked them off balance. Their family system has knocked them off balance. And we have a lot of people trying to tell them who they are. And what I've learned is that it doesn't matter what your age is, but if you start knowing who you are, then you can self-advocate a little bit better. And you can, you don't have that feeling that everybody else is trying to drive your narrative. So, you know, I really want, you know, my clients and the kids I represent to know themselves better than anyone. And I chose the name Level. So Level Therapeutic Educational Consulting, but I chose the name Level because it's the same whether you spell it backwards or forwards. And everybody wants usually wants to reach a level of something, whether it's, you know, good grades or a job that they want to hold or a relationship or a friendship. You know, usually it's a positive statement towards something that someone wants to achieve. And so I wanted to, everybody from the minute they said the name of the company to meeting me, that they knew that they were going to have an opportunity to do just that.
I didn't know that. So that was like, I'm over here like, wow, I had no idea. Okay. I was curious where that came from, but I so respect and appreciate that goal or the core value or the mission that you've created for your consulting practice, because it's so often overlooked, right? To your point, a lot of people are being told what they have to do. And so for you to really put the client first and really have that kind of as the charge, right? Or the reason why you're working with them, I think that's so commendable. And here's my loaded question as a follow-up, because I think it just actually tees up quite well beyond what you just talked about. Knowing the journey that you've had from pre-college through like all of the twists and turns, right, of that lattice, which is such a great visual, by the way, where you are now in life, do you see yourself as successful?
Well, it is a loaded question. It's a great question. It depends. You know, there's really a lot of categories that you can put success on. You know, first and foremost, I put my success, am I a good husband and am I a good dad? You know, those are the first two, you know, that family system. You know, I was domesticated differently than everybody else and my family was different. And, you know, one of the things that I put success on is, can I be more curious and not judgmental? Can I open my heart to new ideas and new trends, you know, because those are things that help me become a better husband and a better dad. And so I focus on those things first. And clearly, you know, I want to be a good friend to people. And, you know, I want to be a responsive consultant to, you know, the needs of my clients. And all of those things are really important to me, but that's what I would gauge success on is, you know, I don't like talking about anything. I like to see it in my actions more than telling people about it. You know, if people can see it in my actions and I don't have to say anything, then that means a lot to me. So yeah, so I measure my success on that. I mean, in my lattice work kind of, you know, journey, you know, I've had a lot of failures in there. And so I've had a lot of areas that, you know, you could say, hey, was that successful? Was it not successful? But all of those things led me to where I am now. And so I see that as success. You know, I see that as success. So, you know, one of the things I would always say is, at least for me, is I've never been afraid to fail. You know, I'm open to crashing and burning. I mean, I don't want to, I don't like it, but I'm not going to shy away from it. You know, it's not what I'm looking for now, if the gods are listening. But at the same time, you know, you have to, you know, one of the things my dad always taught me was grit, you know, is to, you got to bear down and you got to do what you got to do before you do what you want to do, you know? So, but definitely, success for me is based on family life.
So I'm going to ask you this next question, I think kind of like two pronged. First, just like if you could give a piece of advice to any young person, because we work with so many of them, right? Like a young adult who's struggling, whatever that may be, what advice would you give them? And then the follow-up beyond that, because you are a parent who has navigated young people with their own challenges, what advice would you give to a parent who is working right now with their child who is struggling?
I love that question. My advice that I give every young adult that I work with, and I start talking to them right away, and I say this to them all the time, is my goal is to make sure you know yourself better than anybody knows you. So just it stays true to my core value of my business. And then I always say two other things that I feel are simple, but they're very hard to do. And that is, I expect two things. Responsibility comes before freedom and opportunity, and you can have what you can handle. And that's the same for me as it is for any young adult or any teen or you or any of us. If we don't put responsibility first and we go after the freedom and opportunity, then we're going to find out that that's not going to last very long. It's freedom and opportunity is built off of the responsibility, not the other way around. And then you can have what you can handle. You know, if your behavior is wrong, you know, if you are showing up with a bad attitude or you're showing up not being able to sit and have a normal or an adult conversation, and then you're going to get what you can handle. And people are going to try to do more for you if they think you can't do it for yourself. And so the goal is to, you know, it's always good to get help. It's always good to be there. But where most young adults have trouble, I think, is that they are showing with their actions that they need support, but they don't want that support. And they put up a brick wall against the people that are trying to help them. And if they can turn that to just be more responsible and show up differently, then they will see they've got all the power in the world to do whatever they want to do. So that's on that front. From a parental standpoint, it's really challenging because I work with so many different family systems. And what I see the most out of all these family systems is that they have certain values that they are parenting by, but they don't tell their kids what those values are. They expect that their children know what the values are. And I've seen a lot of success just by having families, you know, individually write down their values, all of them, and then look at each other's values and see which ones are matching or see which ones need to be added. And then when you're parenting to those values or you're taking responsibility as yourself as an individual to those values, then you know the right thing to do. It just depends on if you want to do it or not. But values are a great, you know, they're just a great tool to have in front of you. I mean, they can be, you know, on the mirror that you're getting ready on the back door of by the garage or where you leave, you know, the door to your bedroom, you know, but it's really understanding. So why is mom getting mad at me or why are parents doing X, Y, and Z? You know, more than likely it's because of the values that they have created in their own mind that they are trying to parent to. But if you don't understand that, then it's just a whole bunch of miscommunication. So I always like focusing on the values of and just getting some common ground, because you can always say, hey, you know what? Yeah, you didn't do that. And one of your, you know, core values is truth. And you just showed that you're not being truthful. You know, so it's, you can come back to it. And it shouldn't be so terrible for the, you know, like you're not blaming them. You're just saying, hey, we got to watch this core value. So how can we work on being more truthful next time? So those are kind of the things that I focus on with parents. The other is just being open-minded. So many of us as parents have, like I said, been domesticated a certain way, and they expect their kids to be, you know, to be a certain way and to fit a certain mold. And what they learn is that they're an individual. And they're going to do it and grow up the way they want to do it. And I just read an article yesterday, and I had this thought because the article was a 2-year-old is the youngest Mensa member. And it's a true story, but parents are sitting there already. She's 2, and they're saying, hey, you know, I hope she gets into Harvard or MIT or whatever. And I'm thinking, whew. Got a long road ahead of you, because if you're that smart at 2, things are going to go haywire in like 5,000 different directions. So buckle up, you know, and I don't mean that negatively. I just mean that you take that 2-year-old and you say Harvard. And I'm thinking that 2-year-old may not even need to go to college if she's already in Mensa. She may do great things at 12, who knows, but you can't create that mindset and that path. You know, I think parents create an expectation before, and if they can just be patient. I've learned that with my own kids. I've been a lot better off being a lot more curious than judgmental and letting them kind of go through their own way and their own path.
I love it. I feel like as you've been talking, I'm like, oh, those are like really good points. Like I haven't even thought of. So that's, I appreciate that advice that you just imparted. So in an effort for folks to connect with you, to just talk to you personally about your own journey, like working in sales and then transitioning to consulting, or just like parent to parent, or they're looking for a consultant, how do people connect with you?
There's a few different ways. I've been blessed to be part of the board of directors for the Therapeutic Consulting Association. And so you can find a whole list of consultants and everyone there. And my name's on there too. So you can browse around there. And then my website is levellife.me. So it's a little different without the .com, but I wanted it in alignment with my focus. And so it's levellife.me. So that's another way to reach me, and all my information is on there. And yeah, I'm happy to help with anyone. You know, I get some phone calls, and the first thing they say is, and I get these every now and then. I got two of them yesterday, and they said, how much are you going to charge me for this call? And I'm like, I will never charge you for a call like this. Like, just call. And if you need to talk and I can be of some support or help, and then I will. You know, I'm never going to just charge for a random call. So I want everybody to feel like they can call. And the other is, I never drive timelines. You know, I'm in crisis all day long with my clients. It seems like, you know, with something going on, a moving piece. And so, you know, I always tell the people that are calling me and prospective clients, I always say, you know, I'll never be the person that's going to call and go, hey, are you ready to get started? You know, I really just want whatever path that they're on and the journey that they're experiencing to, you know, form itself.
That's so important. And I think that can be reflective too for parents, like a takeaway, right? Your timeline or kind of your agenda mm-hmm. can also benefit if you just pause for a minute and kind of like let things kind of formulate as they need to formulate when they need to formulate. But Mike, I'm really excited that we finally got to connect and have this interview, and you took the opportunity to allow me to badger you with these questions. And I know that at least one person that is going to listen to this is really going to resonate with your story or just be interested in you. And so for that minimum of one person, that they will reach out to you to connect. And so thank you again for taking the time to do this interview.
Joanna, it's my pleasure. And by the way, thank you for doing what you're doing. You know, you meet with so many great people, you get the word out to so many that it's helping. I'll do whatever I can to make sure I share your podcasts and the things that you're doing. So I appreciate your hard work.
Thanks, Mike. That's it for this week's Success is Subjective episode. I want to thank my guests for joining me on this week and for being willing to share your journey. This podcast would not exist if it weren't for people such as yourself. Stay tuned for our next episode, where you can bet it'll be another amazing human sharing their personal story with the world. Make sure you check out the show notes, where you will find contact information, website details, and all social media for our guest. Also, put a face with a voice by accessing their interview on the newly formed successissubjective.org website. If you're interested in being a guest on the podcast, you can email me at Joanna, Joanna, at successissubjective.org. I would also be remiss if I didn't tell you to check out the collegealternative.org and lilyconsulting.com websites for additional resources outside of podcasting. If you're listening to the show on Apple Podcasts, please do me a favor and subscribe. And while you're at it, feel free to leave a review. You can also download to listen to the Success is Subjective podcast on any other podcast playing app, such as Audible, Google, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Last but not least, Success is Subjective is listener supported, made possible by me and by you. You can support this podcast by joining the Patreon community at patreon.com/successissubjective. Thank you for tuning in. And remember, there is no single path through life. Success is what you make it.